Podcasting 2.0 for May 14th, 2021, episode 37. What's up, Doc? Oh, yeah. Man, we got the boardroom packed today. Once again, it's a Friday time for the meeting of the board here about Podcasting 2.0, podcastindex.org. I'm Adam Curry in Austin, Texas, and in Alabama, adjusting the API and encoding the endpoints, my friend on the other end, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dave Jones.
What cryptocurrency is, it's like a Friday, so what cryptocurrency is Elon Musk pumping dumping today? He single-handedly crashed Bitcoin by like 10%.
Yeah. Well, good. And it's still here. So the resilience is quite phenomenal, actually, all things considered.
Yeah, I like it. I liked it. The financial stress test.
You know what I love the most is that, because we discussed this briefly on No Agenda yesterday, and we have the troll room, you know, with 1,000 people in there chatting, whatever. And I'm like, you know, Elon Musk got screwed. You know, they figured him out and they said, oh, here's how we pressure you. It's like you get you make a couple hundred million a year on carbon credits. We're going to start adding your Bitcoin treasury to your carbon emissions. And, you know, you're going to lose subsidies and maybe you should shut up about Bitcoin. And they got him. And then the troll room went, no, 4D chess, man. He's going to figure it out. So let me just tell you something.
Sure.
Elon Musk is as much as an inventor as we are. He's a great marketing guy. I've met him. I know him. I saw him in the early days. I went to the launch of Tesla in the airport hangar. He's not that impressive, but okay.
Hyperloop, man. He wrote that shit up on the back of a napkin.
Yeah, well,
Hyperloop.
Well, you and I wrote this shit on the back of a napkin, too. As long as you get some venture capital to back up to an ATM to your shop, you can make whatever you want.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
That's true.
Anyway, so I think it makes it interesting and exciting. Cryptocurrency, in particular Bitcoin, is under the attack vector as the evil part of ransomware.
I would like to do something in my life for once that's not that doesn't have something to do with being an underdog in something. I want to ride the wave of a successful venture at some point in my life.
You know? Really? I got to tell you, it's so short-lived. It's really not all that great. I've been on top of the wave with MTV, a couple other moments, but it's short, man. It's short, that wave.
I think it's a psychology thing because there must be like an Enneagram number for that or something. Because I'm always the, fight the system, against the trend.
No, that's just who you are. You can't change that. And remember, Dave, the journey is the success. Just remember. It's always the journey that's the success, my friend. No, but it's really interesting how all these things kind of came together. We're just living in a crazy-ass world, and I am so happy that we embarked on this journey. And if you just look around, we started this, 10 months ago? A little bit less than that, maybe 9 months ago?
Something like that. It's like September, is that right? September of last year. Yeah, I think so.
And just look at the control and the pressure that's been put on every other kind of form of media.
Well, there's a great example of this, and I have no idea if this is from us or not.
Okay.
Probably not. I'm probably self-aggrandizing here, but Slate is starting to sell audiobooks as podcasts.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a story in the out this week. That's like, it says, Slate is getting into the audiobooks business. The online magazine and podcast subscription seller is launching its own audiobook store today. And so it goes down, and it's basically they're saying that they're going to use their private feed system. So where you get you sign up for membership and you get your own feed with a token or something like that. They're going to give you a private RSS feed for that audiobook. And so the feed is going to be the audiobook. And I mean, I think we've been hammering that home for the last few months, audiobooks. And then, we had that audiobook by Dan Oster.
Yes. He showed up. When was that? Like a week ago or so, or 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. Week or two ago. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, dropped his audiobook in the RSS feed and
he's got a value blocker. Yeah. I wonder how he's doing. I'd love to know.
I don't know. I've boosted it. I mean, I'm listening. And I think that's a great idea.
With audiobooks, the value for value model is so appropriate for it, particularly because, you know, you're paying for how much you listen. Mm-hmm. So the length of the book does matter. But also, you know, you can pay the speaker, you can have a split going to the author. There's so many cool things that can be done with that. So, yeah, in a way, it's great. This privatization is, you know, this making feeds private. Although I understand, you know, you might as well just use DRM. I mean, I don't know why you go through all the trouble.
We need silent splits. Unnamed splits so that you can send your... So you can send some of your split to the person who actually wrote the book, rather than the person whose name's on the book.
Ghostwriter. Yeah. Well, you could
ghostwriter.
Yeah, you could just put in a dash as long as it's a node ID on the other end. It doesn't matter. That's fine. No one needs to know who that is. I kind of like that.
The ghost split. And it's like, oh, whoever this guy is, they've written like 14 books, because there are nodes everywhere.
You know, I once started to do audiobooks, and it was, you know, I have these periods. Well, you know my periods where all of us, I get bored, and then I come, hey, Dave, I got another idea. It's exit strategy. We're going to be rich. And I said, I'm going to do some audiobooks just kind of to see how it is. And I decided to read, from the series that I grew up with, Tom Swift. Have you ever read Tom Swift books?
I know of it, but I've never read it. And that was like sort of like Hardy Boys type.
Yeah, except when I actually looked into it, I was like, holy crap, these books are from, I think they're from 1900.
That's anything
1910.
Before...
1910 is when they... Well, I was getting them off the Gutenberg Project, so... You know, obviously they are in the public domain. I'm like, this will be fun. I'll read it. And Tom Swift is the guy who wrote it was Victor Appleton. I think that was a pseudonym. And he had stuff like Tom Swift and his rocket ship, Tom Swift and his time machine, Tom Swift and his electric grandmother, you know, all these different things. And because he was an inventor. And I think it was actually very, now that I think about it, very influential on my life. And I really loved the idea of inventing, except his dad would, you know, was kind of his mentor, which that wasn't the same for me. I had another different kind of imaginary mentor. And I started reading these books, and it's filled with all kinds of really inappropriate language about black people. It's like, oh no, I can't. I read this as a kid. How am I not in the KKK? It was. I had no idea at all.
Yeah, I did a test podcast to throw out there that I use it to, test random stuff, and it's one chapter of an old what's that guy? H.P. Lovecraft. One chapter of an H.P. Lovecraft short story, and I was having to edit that thing on the fly, like left and right, man. Because I'm reading a sentence, I'm like, oop, no, I got to change that, got to change this. You know, it's like, man, that those sensibilities are long gone. You know? Thank goodness.
We got a very, very busy boardroom today, and before we're going to bring our guests in or our other board members to talk about a number of things. But I did just want to share an experience. As we look at, you know, the on-ramping of people from, you know, Bitcoin to Lightning and putting in wallets, etc. So Tina and I were watching Tim Pool a few days back, and Max Kaiser was on with his wife Stacy. And
I can't really do the Tim Pool thing.
I cannot watch Tim Pool. And Tina she used to watch him every day, and now it's kind of diminished. Because she's like, it's always kind of the same. I said, yeah.
That's a daily show.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very hard to do a daily show and make it entertaining. But they had Max and Stacy on. Like, oh, we'll watch that. And it was kind of going off the rails because Tim Pool, of course, you know, completely unprepared. And, you know, if you have Max Kaiser there and he gets bored, he's going to go off the rails. It's just going to get super stupid. You know, he's got a rubber chicken. He's yelling. They had to turn the mic down. It was bad. But they're doing super chats. So, you know, if you give, I guess you can do 5, 10, 15, whatever. It seems like if you do a super chat, which is, you know, you pay $200, then Tim Pool reads it. I'm like, because I'm watching Max and Stacey and talking about all, and it's dumb questions coming in, like, Max, do you think Bitcoin's going to make climate change worse? You know, these are not the questions for Max Kaiser. Right. And I'm like, oh, come on. And I'm on Telegram texting them like, hey, podcasting 2.0, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, you promote this shit already. It's Tim Pool. Mm. And it's not happening. It's like, come on, team, let's do a super chat. We'll do a $200 super chat. It was her idea. She's mismarketing. Like, come on, let's do the super chat. There, now, we gave up. Between the steps of registering for the super chat through YouTube, and then you have to make sure it's the right app on iOS, and then you have to confirm with your iOS, your iCloud password that you approve. It's like, by the time we were done, the show was almost over. It was not easy at all, to set that up. Now, once it's set up, I'm sure you're like, boom, 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 super chat all day. But yeah. That's my point. It's like none of this is really all that hard. It's just the FUD that's thrown up.
Well, in that regard, I've been noticing how many podcasts there are. I haven't even looked at the stats lately, but there's a lot of podcasts that have value blocks now. It's got to be over 200.
Yeah.
I mean, I should check while we're on the show.
Do you know what? Yeah, do that. Do you know when we got like 10 new value blocks the day after Leo Laporte defamed me? John says I have a libel suit against him, so I have to be very hurt.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, he's hurt
that
my
was
business.
Hurtful, wasn't it?
It was. Too bad it was successful with signups. Otherwise, I could use it in court. No one signed up after that.
No, that's the we got to do the saved or created thing. Like we would have had oh, yeah, saved 50 signups if it had not been for what he said.
I know it's really cranking. It really is. It's beautiful to see. Now I'm just going to bug you one more time about the two things. The one thing really is the TLV record. Did we talk to the Sphinx guys?
No, Paul's back on the horse now. He was gone. He said he was traveling and stuff, so he's back on the horse.
Right, and Evan hopefully is back from maternity leave.
Well,
paternity leave.
He seems to be. I think what was happening, as far as I can piece it together, was I saw Evan telling somebody else on Sphinx that he's currently rewriting the Android app from scratch. Ooh. So I think Evan. I don't know if it was just too bad and they had to burn it down and start over, but that was what he said. So I don't know if he's probably just been like heads down,
okay,
getting that thing done.
Well, I don't care. I want the TLV records fixed so that we can.
I want what I want.
Yeah, I want what I want so we can make the next step with LNPay. Many things to do.
I just haven't reached out. We need to reach out to Paul.
Yeah, okay.
and ask because I mean I'm sure it's.
Were you going to say trivial? Were you going to say it's trivial? Yeah. It's a small fix. Wow. Yeah, sure. You sound like an asshole executive now. Congratulations, Dave.
Well, I am a partner in a company now.
Oh, yes, of course. Are you a partner there at the firm? They made you.
No. I'm talking about in Podcast Index LLC.
No, I thought this was your day job. You sound like a day job guy.
Oh, no, not at all.
It's
no,
trivial.
You don't want me having any of my hands in running a real business, probably.
Yeah. And it was nice to see that, it was good for a number of reasons. CurioCaster hooked up Value for Value.
That's a good looking app.
It's a great app. And what was really interesting is, so he's basically going the PodStation route from what I've seen of Podverse, like, all right, go here, get your key, get your admin key, paste it in here. And I can just see the fix, it's so simple. Even if you just spit those two things back at someone from an API, from, the LNPay wallet, like here, these are the ones you paste in. Even that would be enough. It's so close. And we're making people click on tabs and go to fields and copy and paste. And we're so close.
There can be a simple handshake, I feel like.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think so, too. Where does Tim live from LNPay?
Ooh. I want to say that he lives
I thought it was the South.
I was thinking he was up in like North Carolina or something.
Well, if he's at Bitcoin, we're going to kidnap him. We're going to tie him up in the in the podcast index suite. The podcast index Airbnb
in Miami.
In Miami, yes. Hey, since there's so, unless there's something else you want to talk about with me specifically, we can bring in the other board members.
No, go ahead. Throw the door open wide.
Oh, hold on a second. Oh, do you have the key?
Yeah, right here it is. There you go.
Yes.
It's big though.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the boardroom from NA Tube International Enterprises, the Honorable Mr. Alex Gates, and from Pod Friend Enterprises, Mr. Martin Morrison.
Hey, happy to be here.
Hello, happy to be here.
Ah, yes, we have the Danish royalty. Okay, gentlemen, so good to have you here. Once again, we are interconnected. Alex, where are you? What's your location? Where are you?
I'm up in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, right. Man, we got a pretty diverse show. That's nice.
Are you from Wisconsin or do you just live there?
Yep, born and raised.
Do you have a Wisconsin voice? That makes sense. When you said Wisconsin, I'm like, yep, that's it.
A little bit, yeah.
Well, you got it, yeah.
You're a Badger?
Oh, yeah, of course. Duck fan all through.
Okay.
So we have Alex and Martin in here today. We're going to talk about a project that we've been working on, but maybe since we're kind of all here and we've all been looking at it and all in our own way troubleshooting and adding ideas, I think Podping is the number one topic for today's meeting. I mean, it feels like we're very close to doing something extremely important. Dave?
I hope so. I mean, so where it's at now.
Maybe a refresher. Explain what Podping is and why it is.
Yeah, I think so. I was listening to Podland yesterday. That was my Thursday night ritual, and James almost got it right. He missed one piece of it. And so the thing with Podping is, you know, I'll just lay the parts out.
Well, why Podping?
Oh, okay. Well. The reason why is that the only two ways to know if an RSS feed has changed and the reason why we're even discussing this, I mean, if there's 20 feeds out there, this wouldn't be a big deal. You should check them every 10 seconds. But, you know, with 3.5 million pod or 3.7 million podcast RSS feeds, the only way to know if a feed has changed is if you go and request and pull it, if you go and check it. Or if somehow you get told that it changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so web, historically, aggregators would just run through their list of feeds and check them all. And then they would run through them again, check them all. And they would just keep doing that continuously all day long. WebSub tried to fix that. And I would say has been largely, you know, it works. I mean, the technology of WebSub works. There's no knock here. WebSub is a thing where you... the publisher registers with a hub, which is just a web server that's configured to talk web.
I'm sorry. So, and the reason we needed to change that is because it's incredibly inefficient to be trolling stuff, and of course, everyone who needs updated RSS information, they're all crawling feeds, and it's mainly a huge waste of resources. But I think. With some hosting companies, it actually is a quite an additional cost.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you an example. Let's see. Tom from Buzzsprout said that they just Apple's crawler. He posted this earlier. It hit them about 50,000 times in 30 minutes.
Now, does that mean that they crawl through every feed they have?
I guess. Mm. I'm not sure exactly what the breakdown is of traffic. And he said they don't log that. So. He said the only reason he realized it is because they were using a unique
Apple
user
is, in fact,
string.
Killing the planet with this.
It's worse than Bitcoin. So that's like 28 hits a second, roughly, on their CDN from crawling, from just one crawler. Okay, so Apple has to crawl you. Overcast has to crawl you. Spotify. I mean, all these us... Everybody has to crawl everybody
Stitcher.
Else. Stitcher. And so you just got this monumental, you know, climate destroying activity going on constantly.
Anything but green.
Yes, yes. It's brown. It's all brown.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, so WebSub was going to solve this and by creating hubs, and the publisher of a feed registers with the hub, and then somebody who wants to get notified when the feed changes also registers as a subscriber mm-hmm. on the hub and says, ping me when this feed changes.
Got it.
And so whenever the publisher updates the feed, you get a get request from the WebSub hub that tells you this feed has changed. You know, it's fine, except envision 3.7 million subscriptions that have to stay active to all different WebSub hubs all the time. And your maximum length typically on a WebSub hub for a subscription is about 15 days.
Then it kicks you off and you have to resubscribe. Oh my goodness.
If you don't resubscribe within 15 days, then you stop getting pings.
Ah, I didn't realize this. And it also yes. seems unreliable in general, because that's the script I use to ping when the show's updated, right?
Yeah, you're sending one directly to our hub receiver.
Yeah, well, that's also not always very reliable.
So the thing about it is you end up with, like in our case, we have, not everything supports WebSub, but we have over 1.4 million WebSub enabled feeds. We don't subscribe to them all because some are just abandoned.
Right.
We end up with roughly 800,000 active WebSub subscriptions that we have to keep resubscribing to every 15 days.
Right, which seems like another waste of resources.
Yes. So that's the problem with WebSub. From our perspective, is it puts a lot of burden on the subscriber side if you want to maintain your level of notification.
Right.
That's one issue. The other issue is that the hub doesn't always tell the truth. So, like, if the hub is silent and you don't get a ping, you're not sure if you didn't get a ping because the feed didn't update or you didn't get a ping because the hub is messed up.
It's like waiting for your boyfriend to text you.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
Hey, Alex and Martin, unmute, man. I want to make sure that if I'm making good jokes that you laugh. This is stop with that corporate behavior.
Excellent yeah. jokes.
They're muting themselves. Oh, no,
it's not a Zoom meeting, guys.
Yeah, it's not Zoom, boys.
We're too well trained.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. Corporate boys. Anyway, so you have two problems there, and so what you would rather have is something that is just a fire hose. And this is if you're an aggregator. Mm-hmm. So, and this is what this is all designed for. If you're just one person that has, that wants to subscribe to 1,000 feeds, use WebSub. Not a big deal.
Right.
If you need to subscribe to 3 million feeds, you need a better way. And so what you really want is just a fire hose.
You need a Jakarta thing.
No, you don't need that. That's the thing you don't need. So Podping is essentially a hub idea. It's a web server that accepts a URL from approved publishers, mm-hmm. It just accepts a feed URL, passes it to a script that writes that feed URL to the Hive blockchain, and you're done. So a publisher like Tom, I was mentioning Tom from Buzzsprout, publisher like Buzzsprout would just send it, just do a get request every time. The same thing they're doing with the WebSub, do a get request to Podping. It takes that URL. Sticks it in a queue. Every 3 seconds, the queue gets flushed, and those URLs get written to the Hive blockchain. And that solves two things. The people who want to get notified that feeds have changed, all they have to do is monitor the blockchain. All they have to do is watch the blockchain. They don't have to ever subscribe to anything. they're just passively monitoring the blockchain. So there's nothing, there's not even any interactivity there. The second thing is it's very easy to figure out if the system is not flowing right, because if the fire hose stops, something's wrong.
Something's wrong. Yeah. Which is basically what I've been doing. Hey, something's wrong here. What's going on here? The fire hose has multiple streams from Brian.
Yeah. So like the flood of activity going into the blockchain is sort of like a red blinky light on the, you know, on the server in the server room.
Right.
If it stops blinking, something's wrong. So anyway, so that's what Podping is. It's just accepting URLs, writing them to a blockchain.
This is the revolutionary part. I've been around for a bit, but this is one of the few times when any organization said, yeah, we're going to use blockchain, and it wasn't for some marketing bullcrap. This is it's actually a very good use of blockchain. It's super cool.
Well, I'm sure Alex knows this more than most. It's like blockchain is a, what's the old, the cliche, blockchain is a...
it's a database, stupid.
It's a solution. It's a solution looking for a problem.
It's also very misunderstood, but yeah, in general, it's buzzword.
Well, but in this case, Alex, it seems pretty damn appropriate.
It solves a lot of problems. One of the things that Dave didn't mention is the last mile problem I've been talking about, where if you take a standalone podcast application, desktop, Android, iOS, I like AntennaPod, they've been trying to solve a problem. Like, WebSub is only for servers. Right. So you can't stop polling if you just have a client-only application. And having a decentralized blockchain with APIs really solves that problem.
Yeah, because the reason it's only for servers is because you have to have a webhook to receive it. And if you're on a mobile app or something like that, I mean, you can't be always online. You don't have webhooks, are not an option.
So does Podping in a way circumvent what the updated API does from Podcast Index? Or is it, or we still have logic in there that is, maybe no. I should stop there with the question. So I mean, couldn't Podfriend just also watch the blockchain and then, oh, something new and I have subscribers for that and I'm going to pull in the feed? Technically, I guess.
Yeah. So what you would have with something like what Alex is talking about is, let's, you know, envision a future where we have the live tag, you know, the live system working with a live tag. Uh-huh. And so you're waiting on an item to go, like a live stream to start.
Oh, okay.
And then, like, how do you know when it actually starts? And that's a way that something like an app like Podfriend could watch the blockchain for that signal. That the feed has changed, and then they know to, then you know to crank it up. I'm saying that right, aren't I, Alex?
Yeah, and it's arguably, it can be more reliable than any of the other live notification systems. I mean, you guys have seen how long YouTube notifications can take sometimes, and this is, it's every 3 seconds, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is truly just a notification system.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the way we're using it, yeah.
Fucking, it's fantastic. When Steven put together podping-watcher.web.app, which is one of my favorite URLs to remember.
It just rolls off the tongue.
I realized this is what weblogs.com was when before Dave Weiner sold it. You had one page, weblogs.com, and that page would just be every blog post, everything that updated in real time would just flow down that page. And and I think I mentioned this, I posted it. When Steven threw this up, I'm like, holy crap. This is the first time ever in 18 years you can look at podcasts updating across the world in real time.
It's kind of trippy, isn't it?
No, not kind of. It's mind blowing. And I posted that on the socials, and the response from people was like, "Oh my God, it's alive!" They almost treated it like like an animal, that Frankenstein thing that's come to life. It's very exciting to see this happen, and I agree. it's like, wow, just look at this. And the titles, the stuff that's coming by that you've, of course, never heard of is very entertaining. That, really fantastic.
It's almost the thing that you wanted from the very beginning.
Yes, thank. It's exactly right, Dave. That's exactly what I was thinking. Yep. And, yeah, although that, well, there you go. There's your progress. In a little over 9 months, we went from what's on the homepage to this. That's pretty phenomenal.
That the
kind of have an amen.
Amen, brother. That's so the reason I convened the this particular board meeting is for is because of all the video stuff that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you got NaTube. And Podfriend, up until CurioCaster came on, Podfriend was one of the only apps supporting video.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just wondering, I guess I'm just going to throw it out there to you, to Alex and Martin both. Like, what do we need at this point in the game for, like, alternate enclosure, live tags? I think... that mixture is we need something around that in order to really get sort of the video experience to like the next level. I want to make those tags happen. And so I wonder what's missing here? Is there, what do we have to do next to get those to sort of like solidify?
So for video, the problem is bandwidth and hosting and storage and so forth. Like, NaTube has been around for maybe four months, and we have almost 1,000 videos now. And they play fine in Podfriend or some other applications, but it's with the way the default enclosure works, it's downloading just the 1080p video every time. Even if in Podfriend, like, if you just have the little video icon playing, it's still playing 1080p and downscaling it, right? And it just doesn't need to. So one way to incentivize hosts would be to allow for dynamic streaming, which is a solved problem. It's built into PeerTube and a few other sites. Typically, HTTP live streaming, also abbreviated as HLS. And PeerTube uses that for both regular videos and live stream videos. I think that would help significantly, and there's some ways to even distribute that bandwidth in a peer-to-peer manner.
Yeah, I think every time I see the animated No Agenda, like Dame Jennifer, when she posts like, oh, I'm earning sats, I'm thinking, oh, Alex is paying for that right now out of his hosting costs.
So
I would really like to support alternate enclosures. Just to make it like the torrent format, so everyone is sharing the bandwidth bill.
On that note, Martin, on the iPhone, Podfriend doesn't seem to play video on the app. Is that?
Yeah, that was so. Basically, that's you can say it's a bug because I changed to a different audio engine that doesn't support video, but I'm playing around like with to have a combo. So when the user sees a video, it switches to the old audio engine.
Okay. Have you seen the alternate enclosure tag the way that Alex has written it up?
No, I have not, but
okay.
I did try at one point to use the PeerTube version where I tried to use WebTorrent like a npm package to pass it, but yeah, I just had too many projects around me, so it was like at the first obstacle I hit, it was like, oh, okay, I'll return to it later.
Is that the WebTorrent library? Is that what you're talking about, where it loads that and then you're basically using a kind of a shared model?
Yeah, exactly. And it should be really easy to use, so I do hope to return to it soon, actually. Like, it's like the example is like a, you know, 7 lines of code, pretty much. But of course...
Oh, I'll do that for you. Just let me get to the GitHub. Hold on a second. PR incoming.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I should give the listeners a little background to this. I would say, first of all, podcasting and video podcasting used to be a thing before YouTube. And then YouTube completely, well, really saved the hosting companies, because there was no way they would ever be able to compete with really even make money probably with the amount of, if everyone was doing video for podcasts. And hosting companies limited that by allowing you to store X amount of gigabytes or pay more. It's a reasonable calculation, but it really fell out of favor, and many apps don't support video, although a lot still do. And it's just not something, it's now, it's baked into the consciousness of people. Oh no, podcasting, you can't do video there. So Mark Hall, who was a documentary filmmaker, a friend of mine, he lives here in Austin. I've known him for, gosh, 10 or 11 years. And we talk regularly about his business, and he said, you know, documentary filmmakers are screwed. We can't get on the platforms. We have controversial topics, so, you know, it's often just that, for that reason alone. And then when we get on the platforms, you know, they screw us. Pennies come dripping out the other end. It's hugely political in terms of placement and promotion. And he says, you know, it's just dying. It's dying on the vine. It's not working. We can't get anywhere. Is podcasting 2.0 something that we could try? And I said, yeah. I mean, the thing that's missing is we need some content. He said, well, shit, let's start with my movie, which had a theatrical release, and it's called Killing Ed, and it's about charter schools and specifically the Gulen movement, who at the time, this hasn't stopped, were infiltrating schools all throughout Texas and around the world. It's very interesting. And this was back in the day when there was a lot going on with Erdogan and Turkey during the Obama days. And he said, let's try it. And so I said, okay, you have to be an active participant, which I think he is. And he understands. The most beautiful moment was, okay, I'm uploading whatever file format. And then, okay, for subtitles, I've got SRT. I'm like, holy shit, this is the same stuff we're using. That's so cool. It was like a minor little joyous moment. Like, oh, man, everyone's using the same formats? Go figure. This is way too simple. And yes, and so the idea is that this would hopefully be launched as, look at this, with value for value streaming payments, and in PodFriend, since, but also CurioCaster, of course, but as the launch platform being NATube and PodFriend, and from there it's just been kind of going, and I've seen the long thread, so I think something's getting somewhere, but the first thing to do appears to be the alternate enclosure tag.
Well, alternate enclosure would help. There's some features I need to work on the NATube side, because ultimately it's not even my software. I modify PeerTube to add some of the stuff, so I need to add like value blocks and so forth. And I didn't even know RSS before I started the project, so I've been learning that along the way. So,
well, you can't tell. Yeah. You hit it well, Alex.
Yeah. I learned. I didn't even know PeerTube before I stood up NATube in like 5 hours. So that was fun.
Well, I want to know though what. So you know, Martin was talking about your bandwidth and like how bad is it? Because I don't even understand how you're running that side. I mean, it just seems like you would need 25 terabytes of bandwidth. In that game.
He's an heir to a cheese conglomerate.
the Big Cheddar.
Yeah, Big Cheddar Inc. He's just got cash to burn.
Okay.
No, Dave. It's all Linode, and with the peer-to-peer tube stuff, peer-to-peer, that helps. It's really not that popular yet. So, but we get, with all the stuff I have in there, maybe 11 terabytes of bandwidth a month, and we usually use, we're at 5% right now.
11 terabytes per what?
Per month.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think, well, I push about 13 through Linode. Dave?
I guess for the month, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's probably about right. The good thing about Linode is that they give you ridiculous amounts of bandwidth. Like, you may be overpaying for some stuff, but they way over provision you in bandwidth, and that's really helpful. Mm. Honestly, that's one of the main reasons why we use them, is because they give you so much extra bandwidth that it's like you don't even have to think about it. I go at the end of the month to check our bandwidth meter, and we've used like 1%.
Oh, wow.
It's just ridiculous. So, but as far as disk space, so let's say that somebody uploads a video to NATube, you're storing that locally, right?
No, I'm using object storage.
Oh,
so it's S3 compatible. So I think the NodeGen 2 object storage right now is about 1.3 terabytes.
Okay, that's a lot.
And that's, I mean, that's really cheap.
Like, is that in Linode also, their object storage?
Yep.
Okay.
So how does this scale? Does it scale? What needs to happen?
I mean, ideally, scaling is decentralized, where
right. You
get other people to host PeerTube, and there's a feature called redundancy where they can help mirror your videos. And that's where a lot of the peer-to-peer stuff comes in.
Now, is there a tool where you can calculate or do some rough calculations to understand how many peers you need of what capacity in order to scale up to, you know, X whatever you're doing now?
I have no idea. It hasn't been done before. But, I mean, there's a couple of big video sites that do, you know, decentralized InfoWars live streaming stuff, but they don't make any of that information public.
Alex, can I ask you, is it decentralized in the way that, you know, if I watch a video that I share at the same time I watch that video, or do I have to actively say, hey, I want to be a mirror of NoAgenda2, for example?
So the default way it works with it, it uses a peer-to-peer HLS sharing system that's built on WebTorrent. And if you just go to the browser, what it does is it takes the URL of the video and it announces that to all the WebTorrent clients. And it says, hey, I'm sharing this video. And all the other clients can pick that up. It's completely decentralized in that fashion.
What's the messaging there? How do the other peers know about it?
It's based on WebTorrent and Sun servers.
Oh, okay. So it's just a typical seed issue. Okay. With a torrent file and all that. Yeah. Okay.
So
that makes sense.
So, all right. So it's never been done before. I like that. Is there a way, and we may have talked about this before, is there a way that if someone wants to help in the distribution, that they can help in the distribution, but then does it make sense to hook that up to some split for storage costs to people who are participating?
Yeah, I mean, that's how PeerTube works by default, even without what we're doing. So I could help someone spin up a PeerTube instance, and what you do is, if you have your own PeerTube server, you can follow other servers. It's very similar to like Mastodon and so forth, but for videos. When you enable redundancy, it can copy all videos. It can copy like the last, you know, 7 days worth of videos for you. And once we plug in the peer-to-peer distributed HLS live streaming from alternate enclosure, that would automatically plug in.
All right. So by this time next week, Dave?
Yeah.
I wanted to ask Martin. So how do you plan on, to me, you're the interface guy. At least your interface captivates me, and you have my wife under some kind of spell. She keeps walking around with this coffee mug saying, nah, 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 nah.
I love it.
So,
how are you enjoying the pillow?
I haven't filled it up with a pillow yet. It's because we're in the middle of packing, and and the less big items I have, so it's kind of nice and compact. But I will fill it up, and I will put my ass on it and take a picture when we're at the new house.
Awesome.
Yes. So how do you plan on surfacing this documentary? Are you just going to do it just like a podcast? Will something on the interface change that would be more appropriate for viewing? I know you think about this stuff, is what I'm saying, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I would really like, I have some lists like the trending podcast and trending true crime podcast and stuff like that. I would really love to, you know, surface it like as a list, like visual podcasts, like have a specific list about that, or, and like I could even consider making like a, you know, not a pop-up, but a, like some kind of onboarding that says like, hey, did you know that podcast can also be video?
Here's Oh, yeah. One of Pod's friends' friendly little messages.
Exactly. because I do think that you're right, that, that there is a lot of people that don't like know that podcasts can be videos. And I think even for the podcasters, it could be mind-blowing like to even like start to think about, hey, I could be doing podcast with video. Yeah. And I think that's quite interesting.
Well, comes the next immediate, well, I won't say it's a problem, but the next roadblock is, okay, so this is, of course, going to be successful and people will be interested in it and they'll want to do this. And then where do they go? I don't think we want them all showing up at Alex's door.
Alex doesn't want that.
No, Alex is not interested. So what we're missing is the tool set that creates, in fact, kind of a specialized RSS feed, actually.
Okay, well, let me ask this on that note. All right. So, Alex, does PeerTube support RSS natively, or is that something you had to put in?
Well, that's a dramatic question.
I wasn't even trying to be dramatic.
What a Zoom corporate answer.
That's amazing.
Hold on a second. Where's my mouse? Oh, yes. There we go. Good one, Alex. Good one. Hey, so, why is it not playing? What the hell?
This never happens, I promise.
Yeah. That's not, you guys keep talking. I'll restart this program, whatever the hell it's. Pay no attention to me.
So PeerTube does support RSS, but it supports media RSS, which I think I asked you about a few months ago.
Yeah.
It was something that Yahoo did, and, you know, that died.
Mm-hmm.
So, but a lot of the inspiration for Alternate Enclosure came from that because, I mean, they use media RSS because they didn't, like, the regular RSS, there was no namespace for what they needed with video.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, the media RSS thing was like some kind of aborted demon baby of Yahoo, evidently, that, like, nobody paid attention to.
You know, I was really interested in media RSS for a while, and this goes back, what, how many years ago is this that media RSS came into play?
No, it's old. It's old.
I remember thinking, wow, this is so good, and also I remember learning for the first time how things don't take off. went absolutely nowhere.
Yeah, so there were a lot of good ideas in there. I think it was back when Yahoo was still Yahoo, actually. But so what I did was I forked the PeerTube code base, and I added my own the podcast RSS namespace for podcasting. So that's okay. It's all open source. I need to talk with the PeerTube developers about how to integrate it, so people don't have to rely on me. But we're getting there.
Yeah, are they pretty receptive to stuff like that? Could you push that back to them, that code?
Yeah, I saw. Because people were asking for features. They're like, hey, can we, you know, tell when a video's live with RSS? And they're like, well, no, because nothing supports it. So I think they're very open to utilizing this.
So let's just say that NATube, I'm just trying to think through this process then. Let's say some documentarian, let's say that person's company, he or she sets up a PeerTube instance, loads up their documentary on that PeerTube instance, and then creates a feed, or I guess there's a feed by default if they upload their own videos to it. There's a feed, they put it in the index and on other directories, then they're done, right? They're hosting their own stuff.
Yeah, it's very similar to Castapod in that regard.
Okay. Because there seems to be a lot of resistance with traditional podcast hosting companies to hosting video. And I guess it's just that the bandwidth is such a scary unknown.
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. Of course.
So, but if you had a, you know, if you had a podcast, a a documentary film company, if they just set up their own deal with PeerTube so that you had some sharing,
right?
And it wasn't all, then maybe that would work.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just bandwidth, it's compute too. Because, you know, when you upload a video, it's re-encoding it to a useful format that can work with, like, HTTP live streaming. And it's encoding it down to, you know, 480p, which is, you know, it's a lot of compute power. So, but yeah, if someone set up their own PeerTube instance with my fork, hopefully to be upstream soon, I'm still adding features, so it's not, like, ready yet. But I could follow them and I could help them with bandwidth costs, for example.
What is on Podfriend, is HLS, I mean, is that something you can handle out of the box, or is that like a bunch of custom code, Martin?
I think that's a bunch of custom code. Like, basically I'm just using like standard, like video player capabilities. So I would have to add custom code for it, but I don't think it will be that crazy, but maybe it starts being crazy across the platforms, because I know, you know, iPhone has specific requirements and all kind of things. Like, for example, you can only play video on iOS if it's full screen. So like they have all kinds of weird requirements.
What the hell is that all about? Since you can only play the video if it's full screen?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't be in a windowed thing. And now they have the little pop out window now in the new iOS version, but I think it's like you're in a pop out or you're full screen. There's no.
You can't, for example. Yeah, you can't go to a web page, for example, and then you know see a thumbnail of the video where it's playing. It has to go to full screen, and that's. Yeah,
and that's one of the usability guidelines.
I guess.
Yeah.
It just doesn't even give you the option, I don't think. I mean, I think you just get one or the other.
Yeah.
So if HLS, I mean, that's really where the magic needs to happen. So I guess what's happening right now, if I go in and look at a video, if I open up like, animated No Agenda or something like that, and watch a video in Podfriend, is it, I guess it's just downloading the whole file.
Yeah. So it's, I default to 1080p because that's a good user experience. Although, I mean, the animation compressed as well. So, it really is a two part thing. So there's a default enclosure, which I'm defaulting into a video because I don't want to break stuff. You know, people hate that, obviously. Yeah. So, but then the HLS stream is a specific, MIME type in one of the alternate enclosures. And that's just a file that you download. And then you plug that into an HLS player. And I think there's an open source project called P2P Media Loader, which does all the hard work of, like looking at WebTorrent and so forth. To share bandwidth.
So is that the HLS file, is that sort of like like the old M3U file where you download it and it tells you where to go?
It's an M3U8 file. Yep.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's like a control file essentially. Okay. Well, that makes sense. I'm just trying to think, you know, if you can deliver. Okay. Well, one other question. So you're storing the video file. I'm trying to get my head around what all the different moving parts are. And so you've got the video in object storage. You've got your NATube instance. So if you do an alternate enclosure and Podfriend kicks it down to a lower bit rate, then is your PeerTube instance transcoding that on the fly, or it's not serving a different file?
It transcodes them on the fly ahead of time. Sorry, not on the fly ahead of time. It transcodes them ahead of time. So okay. It's storing all those different resolutions.
So you would be jacking your storage way up.
Yeah, and that's what that 1.3 terabytes is.
Okay, so you're already storing those different file sizes. You're already doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's for it really is cheaper because it's cheaper to pay for the storage and object storage than the compute.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Hmm. So if you've already got these videos at the different encoding levels, you really are just waiting for a tag to be able to stream them.
Yeah, and the tag's already there. I already served that.
Yeah.
Well, what are we waiting for then? Martin, get on the stick, boy.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Sounds like we're good to go. Well, I don't want to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I guess my only concern is if I do the whole WebTorrent thing and I decode it, like how my different audio engines would handle it, like in iOS and Android and the web. But I guess that's just a problem waiting to be solved.
I mean, it's interesting because I use the APK on Graphene, which has solved all of the audio playback problems that were happening. But of course, it doesn't do video. So for me, I just hit the web version. It's like, man, make that work for me, and I'd be happy right off the bat. I mean, the beauty of YouTube was not just the encoding and the storage and the immediate playback time, and that was a thing back in the day. But it's also the fact that you just hit a browser, boom, done. Now, of course, lots of people use the YouTube app, but the fact that I can say, "Here's a link, click on this link," and it brings up this player that just starts playing. That's a very YouTube-like experience.
Yeah, I can definitely tell that most of the Podfriend user growth is coming from people sharing links to Podfriend, like, "Hey, listen to this episode" or something. Like, it's a really, really great way of viral growth, so that's really great. But
yes, and of course, you pioneered the ~t equals number of seconds. I heard that on Pod News. It's a standard. Yeah. It's a standard. I'd never seen it before.
I don't think I can take credit for that one, but
I think YouTube's been doing it for a while, actually.
I can't remember who on the podcast index.social said it, but I was having troubles jumping to a specific second in the podcast because all the browsers did it a bit different. Then someone just said, "Oh, just add ~t equals something after the audio URL." And I'm like,
why didn't you like that?
Well, I didn't think it would work.
Oh, like, really? Interesting.
I didn't think the browsers would understand the ~ after audio URL.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
Then I tried it, like in the audio tag in HTML, it just worked. Yeah.
That's great. That was amazing. I spent days working on that, boss.
Yep.
Very cool.
Well, it sounds to me like what we may need to do is just finalize this tag. I mean, there's been no input on it whatsoever except for me and Alex. I mean, we're basically the only ones doing it. And I've said this, I said this before, that I don't mind putting in a tag that maybe nobody thinks they need, because eventually, it may be 3 months, 6 months, a year from now, somebody says, "Oh, well, okay, this tag exists. I can use this." And they, I don't want lack of feedback to keep something from moving forward. Nobody thinks they need it, then, and me and Alex are the only ones that seem to care, well, then we care. We think it's good.
There's a whole industry of very poor documentarians who care.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also happy to, implement it in Podfriend. Also, like, I think there's a lot of other players, they have to see it working, somewhere else before they will even bother, because, maybe you can't really, see how it would work in your own app and then see it working somewhere else. Like,
And I would hope that other developers who want to implement this, and they likely will, that they also consider doing value for value. Otherwise, it kind of ruins the idea.
Hmm. One thing I do think of, though, is like, it's easy enough to do the whole WebTorrent on desktop, but I wonder what it means for like mobile phone battery life to do the whole torrent thing.
So Martin, the P2P media loader library has integration with like a Stun server and so forth, which you know helps with announcement tracking and so forth. And you don't have to do uploads; you could do download only for media.
Well, then it's basically not much more work than just HTTP at that point.
No, then I guess the main point is that it would download like a much lower resolution than like the default, and that would help out as well. Yeah,
that and Nojenda has the low bandwidth speed. That's like a different encoding. I think it's Opus, right? The light feed.
Yes, it is. I don't maintain that. No, I have no idea where that comes from.
Yeah, but I mean, that could be the same feed.
There's also a torrent somewhere out there that gets baked every show.
Andy Valencia.
I don't know. I mean, there's so many things. I mean, people used to do this all the time. Kind of, you know, the argument for people in countries pay a lot for bandwidth. That was very, very big in the beginning of No Agenda. So, you know, 12, 13, 14 years ago. You know what the number one country was who was crying about it? Australia? Yeah. Australia. Yeah.
And the hosting companies have, you know, heard from them that they don't really care about, I guess most of their customer base is US. I'm not sure exactly why, but they don't really care about the low bandwidth aspect of it. But as that's again probably a function of the fact that they just don't do video,
right?
And so you know, for if we want video podcasting to be a viable thing long going forward, and then B, even possible in low bandwidth countries, I think we really need this.
I think it's right now. In the world that we live in, yes. Now, it'll take a while. I think this is a very interesting proof of concept. And I like it. I like it with long form. And quality content. So you can really plant a flag in the sand and say, look, this is, you know, we're serious here. And and eventually everyone will show up and, you know, maybe someone will build a tool that looks like, oh, I'm creating a YouTube video. Hi, guys. You know, and then we'll have all that influx. But for now, it kind of, it pretends to be something a little more upscale.
Well, the way it's working right now with NATube, if nobody understands what we're talking about, so let me just tell you end to end.
If they don't understand, then they've checked out a long time ago.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're already gone. What am I talking about?
but for my benefit, please.
Yes. This will be the soundbite. This will be the soundbite to suck them in. What we're talking about is taking video like an animated No Agenda that Dame Jennifer does, and she posts that video to NATube, and then in her RSS feed, obviously the video is delivered, but then there's a value block in there that specifies her and NATube and Alex.
Which I think is already working, isn't it, Alex? Isn't that exactly what happens now?
Yeah, I get 5%, so it's a small file, so it's not that much, but it's nice to have. It's nice to see.
And so NATube creates the RSS feed, correct?
Correct.
Oh, man. You got a whole system right there. You don't need anything else. You don't need a hosting company. You just need Alex in Wisconsin.
Your documentary. There's your documentary company. Your documentary company
right sets there. Up an, sets up a PeerTube, sets up a PeerTube with all the with your special hacks in there.
Mm-hmm. With the NATube forks, and they start getting the whatever percentage.
Shit, I want one. I want to be the documentary company.
What documentary would you do if you did a documentary?
No, I just want to have them on my server.
Oh, okay.
Just host them. I just want to see when people access it. Just want to see them enjoying it.
that's the way that works, and it works already. I mean, it's really cool.
So really, the only thing we're looking for is the alternate tag, and then and I'm saying only with my developer hat on, and then the web torrent stuff on the Podfriend end. Is that correct?
I don't even think you need the web torrent, right? I mean, the web torrent is different than just the HLS bitrate stuff.
Okay, right? But I could set up a web tor. I want to help, so I can set up a PeerTube instance that would just be mirroring and sharing in the load.
I should explain why there's confusion here. The original version of PeerTube did just do WebTorrent and reduce or risk those files, but they're transitioning, like they're deprecating that for the new HLS version. So, you would just stand up a PeerTube instance and follow us for redundancy.
All right. Well, give me pointers. Tell me, can I do it now, or do I have to wait until you're a little further down the road?
Yeah, we could do it now. I'm a consultant, so I don't really want to have the primary video site. So I'm perfectly willing to help people set it up. I want to finish up some features, but it's all, I mean, I got a Docker container, so
I'm good to go. Oh, it's just a Docker?
Just a Docker.
Just a Docker. Who's the guy that has set up exactly three Dockers and is happy? Yeah, that would be me. I haven't run into the shit yet, obviously.
Like, this thing's not working. Adam, you can't run on a Raspberry Pi.
Thanks.
So does any of the larger podcast hosts actually support video? I know Blueberry does, because
Do they support video?
I think so, because Todd, he has his own video version of the show.
That's right. Yeah.
And I seem to remember like having a quick talk on Twitter, I guess Twitter thread, where he said they've been supporting it a long time, but I bet those companies that do support it, they hide it behind like some advanced tab or something.
I remember now, because I set up my stepdaughter on Blueberry. Mm. No, they support the format, but if you want to, you're going to be wind up paying a lot more than your standard fee per month, because you need more. Instead of saying, hey, it's really expensive to transfer that bandwidth wise, they limit you by saying you can have so many gigabytes storage. Mm. So either you're swapping out your shows, or you're paying significantly more than sticker price, which is logical, of course.
Yeah, I doubt they re-encode it too. So if you're uploading,
it's straight. No, video. it's straight MP4 or whatever you put up there. No, it's straight out. They don't do. I don't think they do any of that. I don't think.
Which is common in the audio world. Like, I know all you audio guys don't want re-encoding, but in the video world, you have to.
One thing that could be interesting is to, like, now that we'll have the documentary, it could be cool with some, you know, some more trailblazers, and could be interesting with a few podcasting 2.0 shows in video, maybe a No Agenda episode in video.
Yeah, that's never going to happen.
No.
No, I don't like it. But I certainly know who we can bring in. I mean, the first people I'd want in would be Max and Stacy, just because it's Max and Stacy. And they are all wired up. They've got a node. They got value blocks. They know how it works.
They love video.
And they love video. That's a big draw for them. And if we said, hey, come over here, and of course they do the show live. So why wouldn't we implement our live trigger, and people could get notified and watch it live or watch it later?
Hmm. So, yeah, so what about a live audio version of, for example, well, I guess you already have it no agenda, but it could also be interesting with podcasting 2.0, and because that would just give so much incentive to write, like, the chat functionality and stuff, because you could be, like, communicating while the show is live.
Well, totally. Yeah. I mean, totally. I mean, first of all, we could do this show live, too. I mean, we do it live to recording, so that would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
No agenda, no problem at all. We have the live stream. I have total control. I can flip it on right now. It interrupts whatever's going on. I just need a signaling mechanism. So whatever that that some blockchain ping or something, and then boop, yeah. then everyone would know. Yeah, hey, I'm your bitch over here. You just tell me what you want. I'll get it done.
Yeah, I think stuff like that, it could be fun also just to experiment. Like, before we finalize the live tag, then let's try it out or something and, sure. and see, you know, see if it works. Because, like, as long as we are so few podcast players that implement it, like, right away, then there's room to change the spec. Like, if we find out, it's not quite working this way, then at least we can pivot yeah. pretty fast.
Well, that's what's so beautiful. That's why when you have the content and you have all the other players at the table, that's where we get to party, man. So, absolutely. Yeah. Whatever command line thing I need to hit, I'll do it. Whatever you need. Absolutely. I'm very excited about that.
So, it sounds like we can just formalize or, you know, finalize the alternate enclosure tag, and then on the live stuff, you know, we'll have to think about that. That's a whole different ball game.
Yeah.
Dave, here's what's in my head. I mean, alternate enclosure, I think it's stable enough. So I don't plan on changing anything. Okay. Live, once we have Podping working, I want to work on an example version of live that's going to work at PeerTube. And there's some philosophical arguments here that we've had with some of the audio radio guys versus video show guys, where, you know, a PeerTube or YouTube video is often one live item and not just a live radio stream. Mm-hmm. So I've been thinking a lot about that, and I think we can work that out. And the last thing I'm thinking about is the format that we've gone back and forth on.
Yeah, so, I'm on board with the format tag. I'm good with it.
Yeah, that would be a way to say...
Hey, gentlemen, hold on a second. Are you crazy? I can't believe it.
No.
And now it's time for some hot namespace talk.
I mean, we're almost done with the hot namespace talk, but okay. I'm sorry for interrupting. I have to keep to the rules of the board.
That's fair.
That's fair.
That's fair.
I second
the motion.
Yeah.
So Martin was talking about a way to, you know, make videos stand out. And the way to do that, especially when you have more than one enclosure with alternate enclosure, is to tell them, like, give it a format and tell them it's a video. I think that's going to be the easiest way. It's simple. It's going to make it search easier. You could do it for music. You know, say you want a separate user experience for music. Tell the podcast player this is music. You do it for audiobooks.
See that. So that's the only. I like the format tag, and I'm totally on board with it. But that's the only thing that is slightly confusing to it, is because you basically have video, and then you have like five different forms of audio, and it doesn't. So I get a little confused. When I'm thinking, it's like, okay, one of the formats is video and the other one is music, audiobook, walking tour, all these. So I'm wondering, like, what if instead of sort of that layout, and instead we have certain category, you know, like a list of categories, documentary, cinema, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I'm just making stuff up. You have these list of categories, audiobooks, music. And then you know that this category describes video, this one describes an audio.
I would maybe actually go a different way and say, like, we already have categories, like, let's say true crime or cooking. And then I just want, like, is it audio or is it video or is it mixed? Like, and then I would surface it in the search of PodFriend, like, because I think that... There's a big difference if you want to search for like a video or audio. Like if I'm out running in the forest, I only want audio. But if I'm sitting at home, you know, then maybe I want video instead. But I don't think that, you know, for example, let's say true crime or cooking is necessarily one or the other. It could be both.
I find that very interesting, Martin, because cooking, I think there are certain elements of the way cooking content would perhaps function in the whole namespace realm than a documentary. And let me see if I can explain. So cooking has a video, but it also has a recipe. Now, mm-hmm. there may be interesting ways to use chapters for that, mm-hmm. Or maybe even transcripts for all I know. I can certainly come up with some ideas. You know, transcript, I can set the resolution differently so that it'll show 10 lines instead of 2. And so if I was doing a cooking video and, you know, and I say, and here are the ingredients you need for this, and it pops up underneath with 10 lines. I mean, it's just all these different things that may be used a little bit differently versus when. And so actually, I'm agreeing with your idea. Documentary, there'll be some other things that you might expect in a video version, and that may even just having that tag documentary file type equals video may prompt Podfriend to open up a different, you know, interface or whatever. You know, I can just see all these different use cases, whereas just saying, you know, it's, well, even movie, you know, okay, so, all right, Letterbox. I want to make sure, you know, if you can override, make sure that if it's subtitles, that it shows it in the appropriate spot. I mean, it's just all these different things I can think of based upon those categories of content.
Mm.
A walking tour might pop up a map.
Yeah, and it's important that it doesn't include genres. That's what the categories are for, right?
Yeah, so basically format could just be audio, video, other, or something like that. Is that fair enough? Because you could have audio, book. I mean, you know, book category, but an audio format. Or you could have true crime, video. So you're mixing a lot. You're pulling the category list, but then you're also merging it, you know, with the format, saying I want this format of this category.
Mm.
Or does that break your idea for what format was supposed to be, Alex?
I can see a few different arguments for it. So one is the user experience argument, right? But that could work with the category too, but we need freeform categories, right? Or
we just need categories in general in the namespace,
right? The other argument is have a format for a specific set of expected features in the item.
Mm-hmm.
So for audio tours, it might be it's an audio that has location chapters.
Okay. Yeah, see that. I think we're gonna have this one. This one keeps tripping me up every time because of this. Because if you have a format of video, that makes sense. But then if you have a format of walking tour, like what is it? Video or is it audio? You don't know. You know. So I think it's hard to avoid some sort of merge with the categories.
What if we, instead of trying to define, like, it's a walking tour, it's video, like, instead said, like, have a kind of format support tag where you said, oh, it supports video, it supports audio, it supports virtual reality or whatever, and it supports location chapters, like if it's a walking tour, something where you instead said, like, this podcast is using these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then the podcaster could say, oh, okay, there's an audio version and there's a video version and there's a... Well, actually, it's a tough problem to solve.
Yeah. Well, that's alternate enclosure anyway. You could have audio, video, you can have all that in there. And so it's sort of like, I think what you're envisioning, Martin, is sort of like a content accepted header. Sort of like, I can take these.
Yeah,
I can
exactly.
Take these that, things.
Yeah. That was what I was thinking, but maybe like where it tried to define like what is the best like experience defined for this podcast? Is it video that we want? And then, you know, let's say you know, a blind person downloads it, like, okay, then there's an audio fallback or, yeah.
No, blind people are just not allowed to use it. I'm banning them. makes it too complicated.
Yeah.
I think we actually changed blind people's worlds 18 years ago.
Probably so. I agree with that.
I've got the receipts.
You got the receipts.
I got the receipts, yeah. Okay, so can we leave it at this? Or do we have any other things to hash out? It seems like we're not quite resolved yet. Everyone goes back to their respective caves.
I mean, go ahead, Martin.
Well, I've been trying to work in the joke that I have a face made for audio podcasting during the whole thing, but it didn't really succeed.
You just did it. You just launched that one to the moon, Martin. Good job.
Yeah, brute force the joke.
Nothing wrong with that. Can we get in the that's amazing now?
That's amazing.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, I had to get that one off.
I thought the whole audio clip was that's a dramatic question.
What is that?
From Alex.
Oh.
That is the clip for sure. Yeah, if I could actually create an RSS feed with that in there, I would do it. This is your weekly reminder that I'm still waiting Castapod to be able to use every single tag in the namespace.
If you say it in French... that's the trick.
Monsieur Bellamy, Benjamin, je veux un petit peu de Castapod.
I'll take your word for it.
It was horrible.
What I'm taking away is that I think we go ahead and finalize the alternate enclosure tag as the start because it's already in use. And then we just make that thing go and then live. And then we'll battle out the format tag and try to figure out what to do about that. But I mean, I think alternate enclosure is step one. That's what we need to begin with. Do I have a quorum?
Yes.
I second. Yes. Okay. We have a second and we're good to go. Excellent.
All right.
Excellent.
We want to do some, we want to thank some
people. Yeah, we do want to thank a few people. This is a value for value proposition. The whole project, everything is value for value. To repeat our mission statement, to preserve podcasting as a platform for free speech. That's a lot of what this is, a lot of what Podping is about as well. And of course, the entire index and how we propagate that out and make copies available. And I see the emails, a lot of people get a lot of benefit from it. Just from the database, the index itself, but also we are retooling as a platform of value so that people like Alex and Martin and Dave and myself and Eric and everyone who's developing have a shot at something dropping out of the other end of this if we all work together and push hard enough. And I think we're well on our way just looking at the transactions per month, which continue to increase with the value for value payments. Now, that said... for this show and for the entire project, we love to solicit the cuck bucks. You can go to podcastindex.org. At the bottom, there's a big red donate button. We really appreciate using PayPal for as long as we can, as long as we have to, in order to keep the servers and everything running. And Dave, who do we thank today? I think we have a lot of monthlies again that came in. That list still updated? Mm-hmm.
This is a great, great week. The sad puppy.
The sad puppy did it, right? Sad puppy always works.
It's beautiful. I mean, it's just absolutely beautiful. Right out of the gate, Ben and Alberto from RSS.com gave us $501.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. Oh, do we need to talk about our super duper premiums?
Our what? What's our super duper
premium? Our reward.
Oh, the t-shirts. Well, I mean, that clearly drove this entire week of, but then Eric promptly went off grid and I can't find him.
We lost him somewhere in Oregon. He's on the way from Washington down to California. Yeah. The, podcasting 2.0 certified t-shirts for every $100 aggregate in support of podcasting 2.0 podcastindex.org. And we have a list, so we're maintaining that. And we are going to Bitcoin, the Bitcoin conference in Miami. And we'll be bringing a few of those, I guess.
I hope so.
Yeah.
If
they're done in time.
If Eric's not dead. Yeah.
Oh, please.
If you donate $100 to the show, then be sure and tell them. And if you want a t-shirt, tell me what size it is when you, in your donation note, or email me or something. Tell me the size and give me an address. So we, you know, because we're trying to keep up with these things.
Hey, Dave.
Until Eric surfaces.
Yeah, I was going to say, as soon as you can, hand that off to Eric. You do not want to be maintaining size and addresses. I speak from experience. This is why we brought Eric in. He knows how this stuff works. He knows all of this.
Yeah. I'm so out of my scope.
Believe me. Even that. So I'm just saying, careful what you solicit.
Okay. Send things and I'll forward them to Eric.
And the guys over at RSS.com, thank you so much. You've been such big support. A lot of the hosting companies have been really big supporters, and it's so appreciated.
They said, Adam and Dave, if you don't need it for servers, perhaps you can add it to your boosters for everyone you support through your listening and boost buttons.
I will say that there is an amount of money that I think I'm recharging once a week, 20,000 sats on PodFriend, at least.
I'm about there too.
Yeah. Wait. Point of personal privilege.
Yes. Recognized.
Yes. The Honorable Mr. Martin. Could I request, if it's not too hard to do, could you change the web app so that it does 550 like the regular app?
It actually does. But if you started streaming sats back with the old values, then it keeps those because it was saved in the config, and I didn't want to just update them because if people already got used to them, I didn't want it to seem like, hey, I just updated your streaming.
Okay, I got you. All right, so answer is no.
But I am almost done with the custom value streaming thing.
All right.
So, all right.
No, it's just I got to the point where I love the 50 sats a minute as a default. It really feels good. It's about 3,000 an hour. But then, you know, it's like, I always want to boost any show I'm listening to. I'm going to hit the boost just when I start listening to it. I'm like, you know, at a certain point, it's like Cridlin. I just don't want to be paying his rent, you know, so I want to go down a little bit.
Yeah, I found a bug in PodFriend. Well, I guess not a bug, but
There's no bugs in PodFriend, Martin.
Oh, exactly. It was feature. So I found some features in PodFriend that when I was developing, and I developed with something called like hot reloading, where if I change some code, it just refreshes automatically.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole value streaming, every time it was kind of like doubling up. So I was streaming like 2,000 sats a minute.
Oh, no.
Oh, crap.
At some point.
No wonder Cridlin's like, I want to get that shit out of Sphinx. I can't get my sats. I got $1 million in there.
Take it out before they take it back.
All right. I'm sorry to interrupt, Dave.
No, that's all right. I found some features in PodPing this week, too.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, especially Zero MQ, yeah. We love listening and appreciate the hard work, thought, and consideration you give everyone in podcasting. As always, we are in your debt and wish to thank you in one of the best ways we know how. Value for value. Go podcasting.
Aw, that's so nice.
Go podcasting! Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, Listen Notes. Winbin.
Oh, wow.
I think that's his name at Listen Notes. He gave us $200 and said his message was simple. He just said, great work.
Wow.
I had a good email exchange with him. I reached out to him. I felt like he needed to be in this game, and we all needed, you know, he's an important part. Listen to us is an important part of the RSS Open ecosystem, and a lot of people use his API. And, you know, so I reached out to him through Albin over at Buzzsprout, and Kevin got us hooked up with an email introduction, and I just reached out and said, hey, you know, I want to make sure you have our database, know that you can download it, and here's our stats. I compiled some hosting stats and that kind of thing, and he was just really kind and said, this is great work, and Then he just popped up with a donation. It was great.
Wow. Now, is he using, what is he using from us? Just the database?
I think he's going to download, he said he's going to download the database and check it out. And, cause we've got, a lot more feeds than he does. So I wanted to make sure that he had access to all that. And then, we're going to work together probably on getting some stats because his stats are significantly different from ours on a few of the hosts, like Blueberry. We're showing like nearly 30,000 for Blueberry and he's showing like a lot less.
So what does Listen Notes actually do? It looks pretty, by the way.
Oh, it's a search engine and, for podcast search engine. And then, also he runs an API as well. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think it started off where you could take, like you could add notes, you could keep notes on with a podcast, like take notes as you listen or something.
Oh, and he charges for his API, right? Above a certain amount. Okay. Wait, Martin, weren't you using Listen Notes in the beginning?
No, I considered it. I think, was it Hypercast that was using it?
Yeah,
maybe Mitch. You're right. Yeah, it's David Norman. You're right. It's David Norman. Yeah, the Hypercatcher.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's good. Seems like a really nice guy and a sweet guy and
well, that's so incredibly kind. Thank you.
Yeah,
this is I love this whole model, the open source and the value for value. It's so made for each other. And there would be no fucking war, believe me. if we ran it all, everything would be open source, value for value, would be fine.
Scott Knight, from Elands LLC. Gave us $101.
Wow.
He says, hi, Adam and Dave. After hearing Leo on your last episode, I knew it was time to donate.
again, not helping with my court case, people.
No. Then you had to sweeten the deal with the t-shirt offer, too. I can't wait to get one. Let's see. I think it's quite rich and out of touch for Leo to claim politics when it seems like politics is all those twits ever talk about these days.
Yeah.
Why I can't listen to them anymore. But hey, at least Twit is how I first heard about the No Agenda show. You guys have created something great with benefits to humankind that are far beyond politics and free speech. Ignore the naysayers who don't get it yet and keep up the good work. Go podcasting.
Oh, thank
Sir
you.
Scott Knight of the Knight surname.
Yes, thank you, Sir Scott.
Yeah. Let's see. Who we got here? Oh, Cameron Rose. Cameron Rose gave us $101.01, and his note is, free t-shirt, good podcasting.
Shoot, man. I think we should have Podcasting 2.0 certified on the front. Maybe on the back it should just say, go podcasting. I don't know.
Yeah, that's looking like a trend. Isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Thank you, Cameron Rose. I appreciate that. Matthew Avery gave us $100. No note. I could not find a note from Matthew. Didn't mention t-shirt, didn't mention anything. So
thank you very much, Matthew,
for that $100. Here's your friend, your buddy, Andrew Grummet.
$100. Oh, wow. Andrew Grummet, OG iPodder dev. Holy crap.
Tell me what that's about.
Well, when we were first starting, I was doing the daily source code. I can't remember exactly how I got in touch with Andrew. It may have been another Dave Weiner Connect. In fact, everything was a Dave Weiner Connect back then because of RSS. And Andrew jumped in and he was, I want to say it was iPodder. Because I had iPodder, which was just kind of the directory, iPodder.org. And then he worked with a couple guys, and I think it was iPodder Lemon. And it was one of the first podcast apps, or podcatcher, as we called it at the time. And Andrew wound up being the first hire at Podshow. He even moved to San Francisco. He moved his whole family out and worked with him very closely for a number of years until, I think he was a real trooper. I mean, I couldn't take it anymore. I was like, this is dumb. We're not doing anything.
So he kept on working.
He did keep on working. we've kind of stayed in touch a little bit here and there, but I saw him, he popped up on Twitter the other day and I was like, hey, how you doing? So, every couple of years we pop up but it wouldn't surprise me if he's lurking, looking at what we're doing. I mean, he's OG. He was in the trenches. Let's put it that way. And that's so kind.
An Apple developer? Is that his Malcolm Mac guy?
No. What? No. Okay. No. No. He's, I would say, I think he's more, you know, server side.
Okay.
Probably. Oh my God, we built so much stuff, so much difficult stuff, so yeah. complicated back in the day. Thanks, Andrew. Let us know how you're doing, man. And if you got any projects, maybe we should just have him on the show just to ask
That'd
him.
Be fun.
Yeah, that might be kind of cool to talk about some of the early days. Cause I know he'll agree. It's so analogous. It's like we just hit repeat, but we, instead mm-hmm. of, you know, picks and shovels, now we've got, you know, supercomputers in our pocket. None of that was there. We didn't have phones. I mean, we had phones, flip phones.
Well, that, you know, it's funny to think about that because probably a lot of the stuff that y'all were having to build back then, you know, server side and that kind of thing, like nowadays you could just like install an NPM module and it's done, you know, but you had to code all that crap from scratch.
Totally. Well, we also didn't have chat apps or like maybe ICQ.
yeah.
But, you know, there was no GitHub. No shared repositories. And, you know, we would discover things like, maybe it's not a good idea if you subscribe to a new podcast and your app starts downloading all 50 episodes.
You know, these stuff we take for granted now.
These are the things that we learned back in the day. And eventually what you'd have to do is, because that would happen, there's no way to kill the process. You just basically had to unplug your computer. to stop it.
Nice.
Yeah. Good times. Good times.
Andrew's note, he just says, thanks, y'all.
Well, thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew.
Good to hear from you now.
Yeah. We got a new automatic subscription, $24.20 from Lauren Ball.
Thank you, Lauren. Very nice.
Yeah. A one-time donation of $17.91. I'm not sure what that amount is.
Is it possible that these are the numbers that you have after PayPal takes its fee?
Oh, that's possible. Yeah. If there's numerology, I don't know what it would be.
What is it again? 17 what?
$17.91 from Michael Newman.
I don't know what there's only one way to know. Consult the Book of Knowledge. 1791. Let's see if that was a year.
Michael gave us, he sent us a really good note, and I sent him an email asking if we could read it, and he didn't respond, so I'll read it next week if he does.
Okay.
See, Damon Kasajic, he gave us $15 automatic subscription each month.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and Daniel Vasichik gives one-time donation of $11.11.
Ah, that's the beautiful lucky numbers, man. $11.11. Thank you.
That's our donor group for one-time donations, and then our monthly donors are Podverse, $50.
Wait, thank you, Mitch. Wait, Martin, you're part of it, and you're bringing money?
No, this is Podverse.
Oh, Podverse. What? Mitch is doing that?
Yes.
You guys got to stop that.
Mitch is on here twice.
Yeah, no, you guys got to stop that because otherwise it looks like payola.
Yeah, it's quid pro quo.
He just wants to come back on the show, doesn't he? That's what's going on there.
Thanks, Mitch. $50. Chad Farrow, $13.33. Michael Newman, $10.66. Mitch Downey, again,
wait a minute. Podverse. Now that I'm thinking about it, Martin, how come you aren't giving money? This is crazy.
Hey, I'm streaming money to you.
That's right.
Boost, everybody. Boost right now. Boost real hard. We need a jingle from Dame Jennifer. A sexy Martin, boost.
Martin's not a producer. He's infrastructure.
Yes.
Is that the same as furniture?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mitch gave us $10. Chris Chiruburuk, $10. Chris Cowan gave us $5. Jeremy Cavanaugh gave us $10. Some dude named Alex Gates that I've never heard of before.
Again, just trying to get on the show.
Just do my part.
Thank you, Alex.
Alex, you guys got to quit that.
Yeah, I really do.
David Norman, Hypercatcher, $25. Paul Saltzman, $22.22. By the way, where is David Norman disappeared to? He is gone.
Is he?
I'm concerned.
He got a kit. I think he's just busy being a parent.
That's not acceptable.
True. Hey, Paul Saltzman. That's another guy who I know. Oh my God, Paul Saltzman. I must know really? Him for 25 years.
Who is he?
Paul Saltzman. He, let me just see what, he's not the Canadian film producer. that's not the right Paul Saltzman. Paul is, he's like a consultant. He's just
Saltzman.
Yeah. If it's the Paul Saltzman I'm thinking of, he's just, I mean, this goes back to Silicon Alley days before 2000. Paul, drop me a note, man. I want to make sure I got the right Paul in mind. That's crazy. It's like the past is coming back. It's like, hey, we're here. You're doing podcasting. We're here.
We just show back up.
Yeah.
Round two. Soren Mueller, $10, and Derek Visker, $21. Those are our automatic monthly. And thank you, Alex. I appreciate that, brother.
Yeah. Thank everybody. Thank you all for supporting. For supporting the value for value of this project. And really all we ask for is time, talent, and treasure. It doesn't have to be all three, Alex, Martin, Mitch, David. You know, it doesn't have to be all three. You can just do the time and talent. but man, is it appreciated? It's keeping the whole project going. And, you know, it'll become an endowment one day, I guess.
An endowment.
Yeah. Well, all the Bitcoin that we get stays Bitcoin. We haven't, you know, anything that's come into the index is just staying in Bitcoin. So that really, we're just, you know, we're going to collect about, I don't know, $700 in the first year. Not even. Well, maybe $600 or $700. And we're just going to hold on to it. And in 10 years, we'll be millionaires.
Yeah.
We just leave it in Bitcoin.
It's the same way that colleges get their endowment. Get
their endowment, exactly. But but I'm only half joking because I really do feel that way. It's one thing to buy Bitcoin and hodl it and keep it around and see what happens. It's another thing to be earning Bitcoin. You know, for it to be coming in out of appreciation of something that that you did, and it's even if it's a small little piece, it feels really good. Knowing that, you know, I just leave that in there. We leave that in our podcast index wallet. And then one day, maybe it'll be worth something. And in the meantime, more comes in. Every minute of every day, there's at least a sat coming in. It's so phenomenal. How's that been for you guys? I mean, what's your experience, Martin, Alex, do you ever look at it or you just look periodically?
Yeah, I mean, I look periodically at it, which was also why, you know, I discovered that it had stopped working for, I think, 10 days or something.
Look at the blinky lights every now and then, Martin. It's important.
Yeah, so now I check a bit more often.
Yeah, go ahead, Martin.
But it's interesting to see, and it's interesting to see the trends that, some days it's like, double up, and then, yeah. I do have the feeling that it probably coincides with No Agenda's show dates, but yeah, it's super interesting to see, and I do have this idea of just transferring it to my own Podfriend wallet, and then you know at some point I'll hit like some number where I get more than I can stream myself, and that's when I know it will be a success.
It's so. You know, I follow the trends as much as I can, and since I'm looking at the index node, for sure, No Agenda, Podcasting 2.0 is bigger than No Agenda on the streaming sats.
Hell yeah, it is.
And Tales from the Crypt does quite well when Marty releases. Yesterday, though, on No Agenda, someone did 100,000 sats boost.
That was combined. Transisto on Sphinx.
Oh, it was because I couldn't see. Yeah. I couldn't see it. My Sphinx is all messed up.
Yeah, he blasted.
He just comes in. So he just blasts in 10 times 10 or something? What was he doing?
33, 333. Three times in a row.
Because I looked at the chart. I'm like, what just happened there? That can't be right. Yeah. No, yeah. When that happens, I love it. How about you, Alex? Because you're getting pieces of animated No Agenda.
Yeah, I check when it gets released. It's only usually a few minutes long, so it's not that much. But it is nice to see. I check when it comes out.
Yeah, I boost. I mean, I just boost. I'm just boosting my way through it.
Yeah, and it's proof that the whole thing works too.
But. That's what I. So I guess the next question is: if whatever's happening, if that were times 1,000, would it make a difference in your life?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, that's yeah. the mission. That's all we have to do. I mean,
I just want to cover my server costs. That's it.
Well, of course, but then everyone deserves to benefit after the costs are out of the way. But that's what I see. Man, I see even times 100, I think, would make a difference for most of us. Make that happen. Yeah. So it's just more enabled apps, and once Eric comes out of the swamp, he's getting closer to his on ramp.
We're getting more shows too. Todd at Blueberry put Geek News Central on a value block.
Oh, really? I've been waiting for that. No, yeah. I didn't. Oh no! In fact, this new media show hasn't updated yet for me. But this is Geek News Central. Okay.
I guess he would need to discuss that with Rob. But I hope he puts that one on there too.
Yeah, for real.
Geek News Central is on there, and also another big one was Darknet Diaries. That's a big show. That's a really big show. And I think if we can get some more of these bigger shows, that just helps the whole value block ecosystem.
Hmm. Absolutely. Let me see. This is, let me just see. I have it here. Oh, that's the media show, Geek News Central. Okay. I'll take a look at that. I'll boost him. I'll boost his ass.
Hey, Alex, do you host, what's that show? Wheel of Topics. Is that on NATube?
We've been going back and forth. His big thing is live streaming. So, okay. But yeah, we've talked about it.
Because he's got a podcast. There's a feed in the index for it.
I think there was. He talked about putting his video on there.
Okay, because I went to watch the video in Podfriend, and it was just like an audio version of the thing. So, like, if he had a video. If he had a video and a feed and everything through NATube, not only, the value block to him, you, and we would get to test out the alternate enclosure and all that stuff.
Yeah, once I add the rest of the features for killing ad and so forth, I'm going to reach out to all those other guys. There's a couple people.
Okay, cool. That's all I got.
All right.
I vote to adjourn? To close the board meeting.
let's go around the table real quick. Alex, anything else we can do for you? Anything else you need? Ice cream, cookies, hookers, blow? What can we do for you?
All of all the above.
Okay. All right. That solves that. Martin, anything for you up there in the far north?
No. I think you're doing enough already. I feel like, I feel privileged already. So, yeah.
Nah, man.
I'm all good.
It's we're all privileged. We're all doing something phenomenal here, and it's the best work I've ever done in my life. I enjoy it so much, just being a part of this group, which includes my my partner in crime, Mr. Dave Jones. How about you? Mm-hmm. Anything else besides being able to help you quit your day job? Anything else we can do?
Yeah, you can play. ISO the algorithms.
Well, I would be more than happy to.
The algorithms are running everything, it turns out.
Yeah, exactly. All right, that's it. Board meeting adjourned, everybody. This has been Podcasting 2.0, and we'll be back next Friday with another edition where we dive deep in everything happening at podcastindex.org. See you then. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
That's amazing.
Go podcasting!